Welcome to this episode of On The Case, the LSE Law Society's podcast. In each episode, we speak to various professionals and experts to gain insight into legal careers, law school, and other exciting developments in the world of law. Without further ado, sit back and enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, my name is Sophia Dallimore and I am a second year law student at the LSE. Like many of you listening, I am currently in the stage of navigating what it is I want to do with my life. The best place to start with this search is to seek conversations with practitioners in whatever field or industry, be it law or not law, that you are interested in. Today, we are joined by Lucy Johnson, a real estate associate at the esteemed law firm Clifford Chance. Lucy, thank you so much for joining us. To our listeners who have not had the opportunity to meet you yet, could you please give an introduction to who you are and where you are from?
Thank you so much. That was such a nice introduction. Hi, everyone. My name is Lucy. As Sophia very helpfully said, I am a newly qualified associate in the corporate real estate team at Clifford Chance. I am not from London, but I have grown up in Essex my whole life. And I joined Clifford Chance for my training contract back in 2021. So I've been with the firm for about 2.5 years.
Thank you, Lucy. And during the application stage of your legal career, and then the time you spent completing the BPP in order to qualify, what knowledge or skills do you think your undergraduate degree helped you with, coming from a non-law background?
Yeah, of course. So I did a philosophy degree at the University of York. And when I did my degree, I didn't really know what I wanted to do, to be honest with you. I kind of had a good idea that I wanted to do law. I'd kind of done some prep work when I was at school, but I wasn't certain that I wanted to do law. And so when I chose philosophy, I really chose it because it was my favourite subject. And I think that actually the skills that an undergraduate degree in any discipline, the skills they give you are actually really, you know, valuable for a career in law. I guess the ones that I can think of that were specific to me, I think my philosophy degree was a lot of problem solving. Philosophy is a subject where we solve problems that don't really exist, but that you have to think about quite rigorously and quite deeply. And that is really what I do on a day-to-day basis. I would say that I'm a glorified problem solver. I think that's what lawyers are. We kind of solve the problems for our clients. And I know that sounds quite philosophy specific, but I don't think it is. I think it's specific to all degrees, really. You know, you're thinking about a question that someone has asked you and you're coming up with, you know, an answer, but that is often, you know, a solution. That's what we get asked every day. Our clients ask us questions. We have to go away and think really hard. And then we come back and we give them the answer to the question. So I think there's that, but then there's also just like the broader stuff that I think an undergraduate degree gives you, you know, resilience, organization, resourcefulness. I think, you know, it gives you an ability to work with other people, to discuss your thoughts and, you know, kind of organize your thoughts in a succinct and coherent way. You know, you think about the essays that you have to write and how many words you have to write them in, and you want to get them, all of your ideas into those words and make it as succinct as possible. And that's what I do every day, you know, sending emails to clients in the clearest way possible. So I actually think that whatever degree you do, be it philosophy, be it even, you know, maths, I think the skills are very transferable. And you might think to yourself, oh no, how am I going to show that my skills transfer into law if that's what you want to do? But I think it's just so clear and obvious, really.
Definitely. Thank you for your answer, Lucy. And there's definitely a lot more non-law students now applying for law firms and understanding that you don't have to study law in order to do a legal career. Yeah. So thank you for your insights there. The next question is, so once you decided you want to study law after coming from a philosophy degree, how did you go about navigating the amount of law firms there are to apply to? Why did you choose Clifford Chance?
Yeah, this is a question I always get asked. I think this is a really hard question to characterize, especially in a post-COVID world. I think I applied to a huge range of law firms. be it magic circle firms, but all the way down to much smaller firms in the city. Like I said, I'm from Essex, so I was always going to apply to London firms. But, you know, like I said, it's like kind of firms of all sizes. And I think the thing that made me love Clifford Chance were its people. And I think that the thing that I encourage people to do is to go out and meet or interact with the firm as much as possible. I know that is difficult now in a post-COVID world. It's so much harder. Obviously, I got my training contract in 2019 in February, so way before the pandemic, and I met Clifford Chance at a few events that my university held. But I know that firms are doing this more now. I know that we are, and I know that other firms are. So I think that the thing for me is navigating the amount of law firms is really difficult, but I think you need to know what your interests are. And I think that is a personal choice. I can't really give you a good way to decipher that. I think if you are really interested in, I actually think that if you want to be a lawyer, that's number one. Then number two is if you have not done a law degree, you have all thinking to yourself, I've got no idea what law I like. When you do your GDL, you'll get glimpses into the kind of law that you like. And I loved business law, but I also loved property law. And so that's how I've managed to get into corporate real estate, because it's the business with the property aspect to it. And I think navigating that, it is really just putting yourself out there, meeting all of the firms and seeing the kind of vibe that you get from people. I think it's so important to remember that this is a career that you are hopefully going to do for a very long time. And you want to, for want of a better word, you want to vibe with the people that you work with. You want to get to know them. You want to know that you're in a team that value you and that you can bring your true self to work every day. And I found all of those things in CT for sure. But I don't think, you know, that's not to say that you will find that with every firm. I think you're completely within your right to vibe with different firms for different reasons. So that's what I would say. I would just say, try and attend as many events as possible, be it online or in person, because I think you do get a good feel for the firm.
Definitely. That's very good advice. Thank you. And so your initial reasons for joining Clifford Chance after seeing the firm's culture and going to a lot of events and interacting with the lawyers, have any of those reasons changed or like updated since now working at the firm for a few years that really solidifies your like choice in staying and working with Clifford Chance?
Yeah, I think, you know, I finished my training contract not that long ago. And when I was deciding to stay on as an NQ, I think it's for all the same reasons. Mm-hmm. I think I've made some wonderful friends at Clifford Chance. I work with people who are so interesting. And I think, you know, in the beginning, I was looking at it on a much more personal level. I was looking at, you know, graduate recruitment, the other people that were going to the events, the lawyers that I interacted with, to think, are you my kind of person? You know, like, do I think that my personality would fit in here? And I still think that's so important. But, you know, I've probably learned more than ever now to appreciate that. I work at Clifford Chance with people who are the best in their field. Some of the people that I've worked with during my training contract literally invented the concepts that we're discussing. And I just love, I mean, I knew this before, and this is obviously one of the reasons why I wanted to come to Clifford Chance in the first place, for the training and the exposure to that kind of work. But I think now as an NQ embarking on my career in its very early stages, I just think that those resources, having access to that knowledge, cannot be underestimated. I love the fact that I work with people who are literally the best at their job and can answer any question and are working on the most complex and difficult transactions. And I get to do all of that. It stretches you sometimes in quite a scary way, but in a way that I know is going to actually equip me in the very best way possible for my career. And I think I've come to appreciate that more and more and more as I've become more qualified. That makes sense.
That does make sense. Thank you. And this leads nicely to the next section of my questions, which is about your training contract. So I researched a few of the seats that you sat in during this time, and I want to do a deep dive into some of them. The first one being litigation and dispute resolution. So you did this both in London as well as overseas in Sydney. This is a very common practice area for students to have gained exposure to prior to applying for a vacation scheme. So could you first give an overview of the type of work that you were involved with during your training contract in dispute resolution?
Sure. Okay, so my training contract in LNDR, that's what we call it here, in LNDR, my seat, so I did my first seat in London as my first seat, my first 6 months, and then I did my seat in Sydney as my last seat. So I'd grown quite a lot in between. I did mainly financial regulation in my first seat, so FCA investigations, those kinds of things. So I did a lot of client interviews, preparing documents. When you go to the FCA, you have to kind of present reports on your position and they give them back. They're like statements that you exchange, very much like how you do in court. But I was involved in drafting those and preparing the exhibits to go alongside them. Our London practice is huge here. It's probably one of our biggest practices, I want to say. And I was a first seat trainee. So the kind of stuff that you get involved in at the beginning is fairly limited. As you kind of build up your experience, it's still so interesting. I sat in on witness interviews. I went to meetings in person with the client, over the phone with the client. I got some amazing exposure to some very, very cool cases. But in comparison to how it was when I was in Sydney, I just had so much more kind of say, or like I worked on stuff and took a lot more ownership and responsibility over work in my fourth seat. The team in Sydney is much smaller, which helps. But there I was involved in so many different things. One of my most notable things was I was involved in a commercial dispute. I didn't actually do any, I did a bit of commercial dispute in my first seat, but not so much in my fourth. Not as much, sorry, as in my fourth. And I went along to mediations. I drafted mediation notices. I reviewed a lot of case law. I had a lot of one-on-one contact with the partners, discussing cases, discussing how they could support our cases. I did a lot of construction arbitration while I was over there, which is one of our main practices when we were over in the APAC region. So that's a lot of like infrastructure. That's usually breaches of contract, and they kind of go down an expert determination and alternative dispute resolution process, which was really interesting to be involved in. Gosh, I'm trying to think what else. Lots of document review. So anything that gets given in discovery, the court will kind of, you go to a case management conference, you'll talk about what needs to be disclosed, and you kind of go through all of your documents. And that's quite a labor intensive tasks, so juniors tend to get involved in that, a whole host of things. But litigation is the one thing where I can say confidently that you just do so much different stuff if you're on different cases. It's really interesting.
Thank you. And did you do any work in the sub areas of international arbitration and regulatory investments in either seat?
Yes, so my international arbitration really was when I was in my first seat. I did some construction related international arbitration. The arbitration I did in Sydney was much more domestic, but I did a lot of, in the first few months of my first seat, I did a lot of international arbitration, which was really interesting. It kind of operates in the same way as domestic arbitration in its early stages, and they were kind of the only stages that I saw. The regulatory stuff was all the FCA investigations. They are all financial regulation, and I did that predominantly for my first 6 months because my supervisor at the time was the managing associate on a huge financial regulation regulatory investigation that we had, and that was all he was working on. So I worked predominantly on that, and it was so interesting. I think working opposite regulators is so interesting because the court have, when you work opposite another party, you know, and it's regulated by a court mandate, that is, you know, the court has to follow a lot of certain rules and regulations, and you know, and so does the regulator in a way. But it was so interesting. And generally speaking, for our financial, for the regulatory investigation stuff, we have like smaller teams working on it, so it's much more involved. So I really enjoyed that work, actually.
Thank you. And many of us law students are now actually doing an international arbitration route. So all this information is really, really interesting to hear from a more career side and academic side that we're working on.
Wow.
So thank you. Thank you for your insights. Moving on to transactional real estate, which is, of course, the area that you're now an associate in, casting your mind back to the work that you did as a trainee solicitor in this area, what was the majority of your workload based on?
Sure. I think, again, it changes as you progress. So the majority of my work was transaction management. Transactional real estate is like any transactional seat, but it has a little bit of a extra layer to it. Transactional real estate, the reason I love it is because it's transactional, obviously, but it's also slightly advisory, which is a little bit, which is another part that I like. It's not as churny as the other transactional seats. It has a lot more kind of, what's the word that I'm looking for? It has a lot more rigorous academia in it, in a way. Not to say that the other transactional seats are not rigorously academic, may I add, I couldn't do them, but it's much more rooted in the law than other stuff. And so I did a lot of transaction management and a lot of the smaller transactions, so like licenses to alter, licenses to surrender, licenses to underlet. As I got more experience in the seat, I was able to lead those transactions, negotiate the documents based on, you know, firm precedents, and a lot of like the transaction elements, like funds and getting funds into the correct accounts. Gosh, I'm trying to think what other things I did. I think when you're involved in different transactions, you do get involved in lots of different things. So I was involved in real estate financing transactions, and in that we would do a title report. So we would investigate the title of the property that we, if we're acting for the bank, that we're taking a charge over. In the same, if we're buying a property and acting for the buyer, you would do kind of like a title investigation. That can be in any kind of form, a certificate of title. We do a report on title. That's a lot of due diligence, going through documents, reporting on it, writing up reports, answering questions, asking for further information from various parties, gathering the further information, flagging it for anything that is potentially problematic, running searches, speaking to counsel, dealing with restrictions on title. With properties, when you take charges over them, for example, you get restrictions entered in the title register. You probably know this from property law. And you have to apply for different consents. It's kind of like a whole whirlwind of things. I think in the beginning, it's much more transaction management when you start as a trainee. But like by the end, you're able to kind of run stuff. So I did a lot of licenses to alter on my own, and obviously overseen by senior associates. But I don't know if you guys will know this about firms, but you know, most of us have like precedent documents and templates of documents. And so, you know, the initial drafting, the negotiation is the part when you need the senior support, because that will be very transaction specific. But the first churn of the documents, you know, they're usually based on a template or something. So it's something that trainees can get really involved with. It's very cool, actually, very cool.
Thank you. Thank you so much for this insight. And during your, as you were a trainee in this seat, was there like one specific case that convinced you you want to then like qualify and practice in this area?
Oh, there are so many. I wish I could tell you them, but unfortunately, they're confidential. But I think I just love property law, and that's probably such a geeky thing to say, but I just really, property law makes sense to me. I like that I can see what I'm dealing with. I like that, you know, I can, especially on things like developments, I love developments, seeing like when they go from, you know, the very, very early stages until you're looking at buildings in London that you've kind of been involved on. I think it was a whole thing of it, really. Like I said, for me, the thing that convinced me to stay there was actually the work itself, and not necessarily a specific transaction. I like the fact that it's fast-paced-ish, but with an element of advisory in it. And I love that mix. I don't like very fast pace. I mean, obviously I do still do the hours based on when the client needs it and when things are getting completed, but that's probably what I would say to that.
Thank you. And definitely another relevant point because we're all studying property two now. We did property one in first
Oh,
year, just
my
starting
favorite. I'm
land
so
law.
jealous. So jealous.
Yeah, second, we're in our second week of land law now. So now returning to the present day. So after you completed your training contract and your international seat, and then coming to back to London to be an associate in real estate. After completing this international seat, how have you applied this like comparative cross-jurisdictional lens from your international secondment to your work at present?
Wow, big question. I think that, look, if you come to a firm like Clifford Chance or any other firm that has got offices in other jurisdictions, I can't encourage you enough to go overseas. It was one of the best experiences of my life. That being said, the kind of work that you do is enormously similar. Obviously, the actual law itself is different, but the process is almost identical. I obviously went to Australia, which is has very similar systems to the UK. But I think the main thing actually is, I think the main takeaway for me is, like I said, I worked in a much smaller team, much more the kind of size that I work in now. Actually, probably much smaller than what I work in now, but more comparable. And I think the thing that I actually took away was that they gave me a lot of responsibility in my fourth seat in Sydney, which I absolutely loved. And I think it helped me learn how to take ownership for things. And I think when you're in a really, really big team, like when I was in London, this is obviously our main office, I think you can, it's sometimes easy as the individual, as the junior individual, to think, oh, someone will check this, or I'm not really sure how this feeds into the broader transaction. But when you become an NQ, when you become an associate, you've got to like take much more responsibility for your work, and you're much more involved in the process, and you have much more oversight over what's happening with the transaction. You don't have all of the oversight, obviously, but you have much more than you do when you're a trainee, I think. And so when I was in my final seat and learning to be in a smaller team and taking that responsibility, when I transferred back over to London, I was really able to carry that across quite quickly. I think I'd got into a really good habit of taking ownership and knowing actually someone might not check this in very, very minute detail. And the work that I'm doing is directly related to this thing, and I know why it's important. And therefore, not that I wouldn't have given it my best shot before, but I'm so aware of what it is that I want to give this my absolute best go. And I think that gave me a good run in into my NQ life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that does make sense. Thank you. And although international secondment, it's not something we're going to be thinking about for a few more years, it is interesting to hear about the benefits and what you took away from this seat.
It's amazing. I think it's just amazing to see how other teams work, how other cultures live. It's good for travel. It's good for just personal development more than anything, to be honest with you. I just cannot recommend it enough. It was amazing.
Thank you. And for the final bit of our questions, I want to just ask about your role as chair of the trainee committee. So perhaps the most relevant of all questions of this episode, what common misconceptions about the training contract do you wish to debunk for prospective applicants?
That is such a good question. I not to plug us, but Clifford Chance have recently done a recruitment campaign called The Real Contract. And if you haven't watched it, I would really encourage you to watch it. It is about what to expect when you're becoming a trainee. I think that being a trainee is really difficult. It is and feels like a 2 year interview. That's what it feels like. And I know that sounds really scary, and it is. What I would like to debunk is I would like people to have confidence in themselves and to not discount themselves before they begin. I very nearly didn't apply for Clifford Chance, for example, because I didn't think I would be good enough. That's not a woe is me statement. That is just the truth. I went to a state school, and I didn't really know very much about law, and I didn't have anyone that I could really ask. And so, I think it's really easy to discount yourself. The other common misconceptions are this idea that when you come as a trainee, you're the most junior person in the room, and therefore you know, what you bring to the table doesn't matter. And it really does. Obviously, you don't have the same legal knowledge as a partner who has been doing this for 20 years. Let's just make that very clear. You really don't. But what you do have is a different perspective. And I think that I shied away in the beginning from saying what I thought. And there's a difference, may I add, as well, between, you know, saying what you think and being confident in yourself, but and then being arrogant. You know, you've got to strike the professional balance on that. But I do just think that you bring more value than you think. The perspectives that we've all have, you know, based on the experiences we've had in our life, help us, you know, service our clients well, because we can kind of bring different things to the table. And I think also don't expect to not take any responsibility for your work. You know, this being a trainee is being a trainee, and obviously you are training and you're not expected to know everything. But at the same time, you know, when you become an NQ, that changes overnight, you know, so you need to prepare yourself for that. So when you come in, you want to kind of be behaving as if you're kind of already qualified in a way. You want to give it a good run, if that makes sense.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lucy. And thank you for your time today. That concludes the end of my questions. So thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning into this episode of On the Case, the LSC Law Society's podcast. Further information and our contact details can be found in the description of this episode. Don't forget to follow us at LSCSU Law Soc on Instagram or on LinkedIn at LSC's On the Case. See you next time.